Welcome to The Village Lantern, a podcast for families living with hidden challenges such as autism and other neurodiverse conditions, and for anyone else wanting to understand, love and support. Our mission is to build understanding, empathy and love for families living with one or more children who have hidden conditions that make life harder one way or another. We call this extra zing.
I think the main thing is for the kids is to distract their brains enough from the thing that is you've got to let go and fall asleep. So you've got to remember as well, autistic and ADHD kids and people don't like transitions, right? And what's the biggest transition you can do? Going from awake to asleep. And it's like, oh my God, what do you mean? They say like, you've got to give in to sleep. You've got to succumb to sleep. But I'm on high alert. I need to be safe. How am I going to do it? And then you add in the situation where your primary carer is your safe person and they're going, okay, bye, tuck you in and then leave. Yeah. And they're like, excuse me, I'm not safe here. Even though you're in the most beautiful room with all your things, it's like, to them, it's terrifying.
In the spirit of reconciliation, Takes a Village acknowledges the traditional custodians of country here on the lands of the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation, as well as throughout Australia, and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. Hi, villagers.
Hello.
How are we?
Good.
Not too bad.
How did you sleep last night?
Oh, wow. Sleeping's cheating, isn't it? Isn't that what they say in our circle?
Wow.
I have been up since 2 a.m. today.
Which is a constant message that you come to us with, yes, pretty much. Maybe not 2 a.m., but the general vibe. And so today we thought we need to dedicate some time to talk about sleep.
Yeah. I do think it's a big area of villagers' lives. I get so many messages from people. In fact, I have people all over the world that I could message at 3 a.m. and there'll be, you know, somebody up somewhere.
As a cheerleader.
I'm here to, there's someone who sits on the stairs waiting for their child to sleep. Someone who says, can I send biscuits? You know, what I really like is you kind of need people around you that understand the no sleep thing.
Because I don't have a sleep issue with my kids. We have plenty of issues, but haven't really had a sleep issue.
That you don't have.
But I remember it from newborns, and you've talked about that a little bit, how similar that is. So in many ways, all parents will have some experience with what it feels like not to sleep, because mostly newborns don't.
Yeah.
But you've said before, very rarely is it at this age.
Yeah, I mean, the irony is with my two children, they slept really well as newborns, really brilliantly. And this is quite a common thing I've also heard with neurodivergent kids, is they can start off being great at sleeping. And, you know, my eldest used to sleep 12 hours a night on the dot, fall asleep, wake up exactly the same time, very regimented. And it only when they kind of got to the age where they had brains that were waking up to the world and going, oh my God, I'm on my own and I'm not attached to my parent. And your parent is the kind of safe person and the one person that's going to keep you alive. Mm. That's when it all goes wrong. And, well, this is what I found. And
Or you just said it out loud that they slept for 12 hours and they heard. And
they basically, I just fuck it all up. Yeah.
When did that start? And actually, I'm keen to hear because I don't have much experience with this, keen to hear what you guys know about the neurodivergent brain and how sleep for many is a problem and what you know about that. But when did it start for your kids?
When did it start? With my son, he hit the age of probably 6 or 7, and we've spoken to a lot of psychologists about this, and apparently at that age, particularly in boys, and I have seen a pattern, particularly with autistic boys, but actually boys in general, is they suddenly realise that they're separate entities at that age, and they start to panic a lot more about being away from you. So that's when things started to go wrong, and we started to co-sleep and needed to be in our room. And in fact, at one point, he couldn't be in his room at all. And he had, and you know, it coincided a bit with lockdowns and not being able to leave our side and everything. And with my daughter, I would say she probably was around 4, a bit earlier. But with her, it was almost more pronounced because she was in such a state, and we're still dealing with her. That's why I'm in the 2 a.m. club at the moment. She has days where I've done 48 hours no sleep with her before.
She's like up and chirpy.
She's
like
up, chatting. She wants to learn. Her brain is wide awake. It's very difficult to soothe that back down to sleep. And there is a little window of time where we try and get her back to sleep, because obviously you get so scared about it impacting their development. You know, all you hear is, oh my God, they need at least 10 hours at that age. She's
five
now. They're growing and all this. And she knows all that. I know all that. And actually that
my
just
chest
adds,
feels really tight. Right,
she knows that.
She knows all that.
She like worried about her development.
Yes.
Oh my God.
You do this whole, you know, you try and explain, because I don't know about your kids, but with mine, they like to know why. Like, why do we go to sleep? Why do I need to go to sleep? Mm. You know, this is crazy. And then you explain, well, if you want to grow up and be big and strong and healthy, you know, we need sleep, we need water, we need food. It's like animals, you know, and we explain it that way. And they get it, but there's quite a few things stopping them being able to sleep. And those things are actually not their fault.
Can you paint a picture?
Mm.
Just tell us about last
it's
night.
Torture. Oh, you're actually torturing.
It's really
tortured.
It's been so long now. I'd say we've had 2 years now with this crazy sleep, and it is torture. And to be honest, it's interesting because I've just had a month away back in London at home, away from the children, and I slept so well. I was like, oh, I forgot what this feels like. And, you know, I slept a good 8-9 hours a night, uninterrupted. And I felt $1 million.
Mm. Your skin looks really good.
Oh, thank you. All my cells are like, thank you.
Yeah.
So what happens? Like, is it when you go to bed? Like, tell us about a hell night.
Well,
I mean, if that was just last night.
There was a time when bedtime was really difficult. So probably only 6 months ago, they couldn't be in the same room. My children couldn't be in the same house at bedtime because my daughter's bedtime routine was so fractured and so stressful and so violent, and it was quite scary because she was so terrified of going to sleep. So we've done a lot of work on that.
With the behaviour person?
With a psychologist, with a kind of OT hybrid therapist.
Mm-hmm. You had to do all these things to help her get ready for bed, and your other child couldn't cope with that.
He couldn't cope with that because she was quite volatile. But also all the things you get told about, you know, really good sleep hygiene, like, you know, turning screens off for an hour before bed, you know, winding down, all that. That doesn't work with a lot of autistic kids, in my opinion, from what I've seen. So she needs screen time because if she doesn't have screen time, she cannot relax.
Can't regulate.
She cannot regulate it by herself. So what's the number one thing that helps her regulate? Screens.
Mm-hmm.
So once we threw away everyone else's preconceived ideas of what children need to sleep.
And advice is for neurotypical kids.
Yes. Yeah, like people haven't done, all those studies are done on neurotypical kids. You know, I've gone into like research to find about our kids. Like, I don't care about the other kids. I need to know what my kid needs. And a lot of children need screen time, to downtime, to regulate, to get themselves in a state of kind of almost switching off from the world. The world is a crazy place for them.
Because it's passive. Mm. So there's no demands on them.
Yes.
They just get to receive, you know, or consume what's happening, but they can lie down.
Yeah.
They can choose what they want to watch.
They're in control.
They might watch their favorite thing over and over again. So it gives them a sense of, you know, familiarity.
And I think you're taking that away. Mm. That's actually, then they've got an hour before they're supposed to go to bed. The anxiety is through the roof because you're like, it's time for bed in an hour. I'm taking away all the things that are really comfortable for you. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is that?
Exactly.
That's horrendous.
And if you think about it, you know, it's like, okay, you know that thing you really hate doing? You have to do it every day. And also if every time we do anything within a sleep hygiene kind of timetable, it's going to remind you of that thing you absolutely hate doing. Mm. So actually you're building up to an even more horrific night.
Yeah, with more anxiety.
More anxiety, more build up, more whatever. So we have...
And the parents going, step one, come on, step one,
why have you not
relax.
Done? It's like, just bloody relax. It's like, well, that's not going to help. You know, we've got a lot better on that, and I'll go into details on how we've improved the kind of bedtime routine. But often now she will go to sleep at, yeah, before it was midnight. Now she would probably go to sleep about 9.
Amazing.
Which is amazing.
And what time does your older one go?
So he won't go to sleep till, he used to go to sleep beyond midnight, okay, maybe 1 a.m. But now he's probably a 10:30.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good for him.
Pretty good.
And then she'll sleep for a while. And if she's, if there's no
wake
up.
Where is she? In your bed?
No, she's one of those children, which is another interesting thing.
Oh, she needs her space.
She needs her space, yeah, but she needs you. Mm. So it's like I've got one child who needs to be attached to me and is very, needs to co-regulate in the same bed, co-sleep.
Full body contact.
Full body contact, entwined in body.
Yeah.
And the other one is like, don't come near me.
But don't
go away.
Be in the room, but turn away from me.
But don't look at me on a 45-degree angle. Don't speak, but say something. Do something. So she...
Don't breathe heavy.
Yeah, stop breathing. But she's... there have been moments where she's begged me to help her sleep. She's, do something, Mom. Make me sleep. I was like, I can't just make you sleep. Like, and we, you know, she's like, you must know how to do this. It's like a kind of thing you need to learn. And I, you know, there's nothing worse than your child begging you for help and you going, I'm trying, you know, you're spraying them with lavender. Bloody good. So the wake up is the tricky bit, because sometimes she will go back to sleep and I'm like, yes. So I do very minimal. It's all this stuff will go into kind of what we do later in the show, I'm sure. But if she doesn't go back to sleep, I do try for a good hour or two, because I just can't bear the thought of just handing over an iPad to a child at 2 a.m. But I do try for a couple of hours, and by about 4 a.m. this morning, I was like, I can't, I'm literally cross-eyed.
I was going to say, you're off your face with exhaustion, because you'd be like that newborn where you just like,
it's weird, because I think it's like that newborn thing where you're like, I've done this before, I can do it again, dig deep, get through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do, Sunny and I often tag team, but depends who's got the busier the next day, or, you know, and it's, I mean, single parents, I don't know how they do it. It must be very hard. Mm.
Does, when she has the iPad, when you give in at 4 a.m., does she fall asleep with it?
So we've had lately success with that, because she's worked out that she can shut her eyes and fall asleep listening to it.
That's what my daughter does.
Yeah, and to me, that's like her working out. It's obviously, I've explained that she can do that, but she needs to work out for herself what she needs. Mm. She's got audio tapes, all those things, which we use, but they're not, they don't quite cut it for her.
Because that's the safety blanket, is the iPad.
Is the iPad. Having it there.
I think it's maybe the sensory input as well.
Often you've got your eyes closed.
Well, before they're closed.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But it's like, she'll often just be, you know, lying there, and she can't, she has to, she'll get a hairbrush, she'll brush her animal, she'll wipe everything in her bed, she will squish Play-Doh. She's like desperate to soothe herself, and she's just trying everything and it's not working. And, you know, I feel for her, because I'm like, she hasn't, you know, at 5, you haven't quite worked out your kind of things that are going to...
Or at 48.
Yes, well, this is it. It all changes, doesn't it? But she wants to find the thing.
That's amazing that she's seeking.
She's trying, yeah.
Does she have ADHD?
We think so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to...
Because I was thinking like that...
ADHD, as they call it.
Yeah, ADHD. Because that restlessness as well, like restless legs and things like that, that's what my youngest with ADHD definitely has, and that's why she struggles to get to sleep.
I think that's it as well. If you have a child who has both, then you might solve the anxiety, but by solving the anxiety, the ADHD kind of dopamine need, it gets exaggerated. So it's like, I need something else. She literally goes, I'm bored, I need to do some more. I'm like, it's 1 a.m. like, can we not be bored? Let's just do nothing. She's like, I can't do nothing, I have to do something. I need to find out how a rabbit makes babies and what makes the moon bright. Why is that? You're like, what?
I've been noticing with myself, with my ADHD, when I'm in one of those places where I desperately need that stimulation, it's like this the motor inside you that is pushing you to go and get it. It's this sort of like desperate sort of addiction kind of thing. And you think, oh, my God, chill in there. Yes. Like, stop pushing me to that. But it's almost like it's not a conscious thing. Mm-hmm. It's really... consuming.
I can see her physically doing that. I can see her jiggling and just going, I can't stop, Mum. Yeah. I can't do it. I need to help me. Just help me. And she's like, almost at one point, She used to just dance around her bedroom for 3-4 hours.
Has she got a swing?
No, we put her in a tent.
Yeah.
She's in a tent. Her bed is a tent.
Can she breathe?
I don't think breathing helps her sleep. She's got sensory light. She's got, I mean, you know, we, you name
space.
It, we've done it.
Yeah. So sensory light, lavender spray in the face.
Lavender spray.
Can you just run through what you've tried?
Yeah. So obviously this has been a long journey because of my son as well. We've, you know, been through a lot of things. And to be honest, there's been times where I put shouts out onto social media going, help me, what can I try? And like, everyone's like, melatonin. And I'm like, yep, of course I would be trying melatonin.
I've done, tried,
of course.
Yeah.
But there are other things you can try. And for us, we have now got really good medication that is helping with sleep. There is a physiological reason why a lot of kids who are neurospicy don't, you know, sleep, because they don't make melatonin in their bodies,
right,
like naturally, like neurotypical people with. And I'm not just talking about neurodivergent children,
yeah,
adults as well.
Yeah.
They grow up to be adults. So they don't make melatonin, which is a natural sleep hormone.
Right.
So obviously giving them some melatonin would obviously help. There was a time when we first tried melatonin with my eldest when he was 7, and it was when we gave it to him, it was the first time we'd ever seen him yawn.
Does it work straight away, or does it have to build up in the system?
Basically, the longer you take it, the less it works.
Mm. Oh, awesome.
Honestly, so people often have breaks for like holidays, and I'm like, why would you want them to not sleep on holiday? That's when you want them to sleep.
Yeah.
Often people who are on medication for ADHD, like my kids, they need the melatonin because they're not naturally getting tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've had parents openly crying when their child yawns and then falls asleep because they've never seen them tired or look naturally tired enough to go to bed.
Whoa.
And you know, when you have a child that stays up till midnight, 1 a.m. totally as if it's like 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and there's no, it's not a bedtime and you're not desperate to go to sleep, when they get to the point where they go to sleep at a kind of normal-ish time, you it's quite emotional because you're like, wow. So
Okay, I want to hear about all the things, and then I want to ask about the impact of no sleep.
Okay, yeah.
But let's tell me what else you've tried.
I mean, coming from England, where it was actually really difficult to get melatonin, which makes me so cross, because the amount of groups I'm in where they're like going, who's got melatonin? How do you get it? To me, I think it's the equivalent of not giving a diabetic their insulin.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they stop people from having the thing they need to make them function and be able to live their lives?
It was hard here about 5 years ago.
It's got better.
But it's because
you guys are paying, you know, like in England, everything's NHS. Unless you go private. So for my son, he's on melatonin pills, which are slow release, because you can have ones that just basically slowly go into the body, and so it sort of keeps them asleep a little bit longer, because some melatonin just knocks you out in theory, and others last a bit longer. So you've got a 4-hour window to kind of get them to sleep. And actually, if you can get through that 4-hour window, they'll probably stay asleep.
Yeah. And how do you get them to sleep? Like, what are the techniques of different things that you do in that time when you're trying before you give up?
There's a lot of screen time in bed, in dark rooms, you know, all that thing about having showers and baths before bed. Yes, it does work, but if the shower is going to heighten them.
But you have to get them in the shower.
In the shower, and then that's a lot of stimulus.
Yes.
So, I mean, even things like, I can't read either of them books at the moment at bedtime, which makes me a little bit sad, but that's too much stimulation. So you go, well, why are you giving them an iPad? It's like totally different stimulation to their brains. Listening to a storybook is like they're imagining the story. They're having to get involved in that story. If it's a new story, that's even more. That like their brain is thinking.
So that's why podcasts for storybooks don't work.
No, I mean, it's my eldest. He's on an Audible Harry Potter bonanza. He's been on it for 5 years. He listens to Stephen Fry every single night.
Amazing.
For 5 years, not in order. So he doesn't listen to Harry Potter in order. It's all in different order. And it's become like white noise. Stephen Fry is in our bed. Stephen Fry's in our bed every night talking to us.
I still use brown noise. You know,
brown noise
for some of my kids. Yeah.
Oh, what brown noise. Brown noise.
So it's the frequency kind of, I think it's below the white noise, so it's less harsh.
Does it sound like when you, olden days when you turn the TV on and there was no channel, or is that white noise?
Well, that's white noise. Yeah. Right. So it's similar, but it's like I use Spotify and just say play.
Is it my brain's thinking it's a cow.
No, like, no, it's like shh.
Oh, no, how now, brown noise?
it's like shh instead of.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, slightly lower.
That's funny because really when they were babies, I used to go shh, shh.
Yeah.
And I had a shusher.
Yeah.
Like a machine that shushed.
Oh, you had a shushing machine.
Yeah. Oh, I used to do it myself and rock.
No, there's a machine that
I used
does
to rock
that.
A cot, like oh lift up an God. Entire cot. Oh. And rock it.
But what I think the main thing is for the kids is to distract their brains enough from the thing that is you've got to let go and fall asleep. So you've got to remember as well, autistic and ADHD kids and people don't like transitions, right? Mm. And what's the biggest transition you can do? Going from awake to asleep.
Wow, yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, what do you mean? I have to now, you know, they say like, you've got to give in to sleep. You've got to succumb to sleep. It's like but I'm on high alert. I need to be safe. How am I going to do it?
Yes.
Yeah, and then you add in the situation where maybe your primary carer is your safe person and they're going, okay, bye, tuck you in and then leave.
Yeah.
And they're like, excuse me, I'm not safe here. Like, even though you're in the most beautiful room with all your things, it's like, to them, it's terrifying.
So then they end up in your bed, but they're still scared or they're still seeking some resolve for their panic.
Yeah, I mean, I think the secret, I mean, with my daughter now, she's on other medication. So she's on liquid melatonin, which is the kind of bigger guns. You know, that stuff is amazing.
Just had a vision of like a meth pipe.
Yeah.
When you really need it.
It's almost like taking a wee dram.
Having
a little wee dram before bed.
When she's on that, she still wakes up at 2.
Yeah. And they've said we can give her some more, but honestly, it doesn't work at 2. I've tried.
Okay.
And then she's just even more wired because she fights it. She will fight the sleep. So she's also on
she's got adrenaline at that point that's counteracting the melatonin.
Because she's like, oh no, I'm tired. I mustn't be tired. I cannot sleep. Do not make me sleep.
Because because your kids are very articulate. Do they explain what it is about sleep that's so scary?
Yeah.
What do they say?
Well, they say, she says, I can't switch my brain off, which I just think is, And so that's the whole distraction, which is iPads, sleep tapes, sleep stories, trying to just take their mind off the fact that you're going to go through this transition, which is terrifying. Also, dreams. I mean, they have very vivid dreams. I mean, I think that's quite a common thing with neurodivergent kids is their dreams are just really intense. Like they have really full-on days, full of stimulus. They're processing all this stuff.
Right.
And then it's like, cool, now we're going to sit back and just play that all through your head.
Yeah. And I think also lying still.
It's so hard.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
Having to like lie down and think of nothing is what you're essentially telling our kids, which they can't do.
With her now, she also is on a medication called clonidine, which is a blood pressure medication, which is a new one I've tried. Mm-hmm. And that's what she has at the wind down stage of bedtime. So before the melatonin, half an hour before, and the whole point is you kind of try your combinations and each child is different. But for us, that just sort of is the natural way you would go, I really should start to, you know, take some deep breaths and start to relax a bit and do some nice slow things. Because what was happening is she was just still tearing around the house, doing 100 million activities. You know, she just wouldn't even naturally at the point of we should just all slow down a bit now.
So I'm really fascinated by is that my daughter has always slept really well, but she suffers severe fatigue all the time. Mm. So all the time. So by the time she's in bed, I think her body's just like, and she kind of falls into quite a deep sleep. But what you just said before about the idea of somehow your brain, unless I didn't hear this correctly, that your brain knows that now's the time to breathe more. So I don't have that experience at all. Yeah. I fall asleep because I'm absolutely exhausted.
But that's why my children slept so well when they were young. They got to the end of the day, so you know they might have dropped a nap earlier than other children, but they got to the end of the day and they passed out.
But why aren't they tired now?
Because they're not passing out enough, so they're not doing enough. But if you with a child, you'd normally say, let's go run them like a dog, let go to the park, do all these things. that doesn't work with my kids because that stimulates their brain even more.
So you can't get them to a point of physical exhaustion.
Yeah.
Is that part of it?
You can't get them to the physical exhaustion, but I would say in my world, their brains are just working very hard all the time.
Yeah.
And they're processing stuff and they're working stuff out and they... When I've spoken to the psychiatrist about this, she said to me, look, something that happens in the day might not have an impact on them until the day after or even 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always like, oh, today we had quite a good day. Why is she not sleeping? Or why is he not sleeping? But she said, you know, don't see it as a linear kind of, you know, we did something during the day and so you should be if my daughter goes swimming, most kids would be like zonked that night. She never sleeps. And I'm like, what's that about? It's because if you go swimming, can you imagine? There's water, there's noise, there's kids screaming, there's stimulus that you've got to survive. You know, it's full on, like the most, like the biggest input in your senses.
And in that, when she's swimming though, mm-hmm. does she appear to be having a pretty good time?
Having a lovely time.
That's the thing that is so confusing. Yeah. Yeah. Because for us to be able to acknowledge that what we see in terms of an experience that they're having, if they're not... like physically or verbally or with their facial expressions demonstrating that there is that's taking from them. You're like, you love that. That was good because of what it looked like. But actually there's all this other processing that happens. That is so hard to even try and connect and understand.
And I think that's the other thing why we need this village, because you could be at a swimming pool and there'll be parents going, oh, they're going to sleep so well tonight, aren't they? And I just want to like punch them in the face because I'm like, no, because my child will be overstimulated from this and they won't sleep probably for 2 or 3 nights after this.
Do you just never go swimming again?
Well, this is it. So you're like, what do you do? What do you do?
Does she want to swim?
Yeah, so you're like, oh, I just have to be prepared. But also it changes, doesn't it? Because as we know, our children never stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then they might develop into something else. And it might be swimming is really good the next time. But as far as I know, for the last 2 years, swimming has not been
great. So that thing that you just described about that sensory overload, that's one of the things that's starting to become more and more clear to me, is this how severe the sensory processing disorder is, certainly with my... probably with all my kids, but definitely mostly with my daughter. And for so many years, I've had OTs in particular or speeches saying, oh, that's a sensory thing. You need to, and I'm like, what are you talking about? You need a good sensory diet.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you can be sensory seeking or sensory avoiding. And it's taken me 13 years to start to understand what that really means. And now it actually seems like it makes so much sense because actually, the most basic part of us as humans is our senses tell us how to interpret the world. And if our processing is, you know, not in the way that helps us to result in a calm state or at least an appropriate state, right? So sometimes it's appropriate to feel scared or anxious because that's necessary. Mm. But our kids, it's kind of all miswired or whatever. Mm. It's to actually spend the time to think about the sensory environment all the time and then to understand for your child whether, you know,
the
too much
light.
Yes, and also that it varies. You know, sometimes too much noise, sometimes not enough noise. One of the things my daughter does to seek sensory input is to turn the TV up really loud so that the sensory input that she's seeking is us yelling at her. Not the full volume of the TV. And we had our autism person with us because the autism person was with us at that point and she said that and my mind just exploded. I was like, what? What do you mean? How am I supposed... like, these sorts of things are like these nuggets of gold that you have to dig, like, to get. And you really need some experts to help you with that.
Is the yelling... is it like when you try and deliberately pick a fight with somebody?
Yes, I think
so. Is it that you want that response and that reaction?
Yes, I didn't go into that. I think it's partly about attention, but also partly about the scent, the sound and
also,
the tone. I don't know.
If you think about our kids, if, you know, for my kids, if there's a very quiet noise, that's really quite... full on. Whereas if there's a really loud noise, it drowns out all the kind of very lots and lots and lots and lots of quiet noises, which are actually all competing for your attention.
Yes.
Everyone in our house hates, except for Scott, any whistling, any type of noise, like
humming,
any noise
crunching.
Like that.
Crunching.
No, those, as you say, those really quieter kind of and repetitive noises make all the neurodivergent people go crazy.
Because that's a layer upon layer upon layer
that's so interesting.
Of sounds, which are actually really... and if your brain... someone explained the autistic brain a bit like a Amazon delivery depot. And if you've got, you know, you've got information coming in, which is in, like, brown packages, and then it goes into the depot and it's like, right, what do I need to do with this information? Mm. And a lot of the autistic brains are going, I haven't got a bloody clue. Well, they're all coming in
or
at
I'm
once.
Or getting on the wrong bus and then ending up at the wrong place and then getting returned.
And I get it. It's like, you know, if someone was all screaming demands at you or screaming instructions and you're like, who do I listen to? Mm. Them or them? Do I listen to the clock ticking, my stomach gurgling, someone sneezing, someone's clicking the pen
and I reckon,
there.
Yeah, that's really ADHD. I mean, I'm sure it's everything, but the ADHD issue is not that you have lack of attention. You have too much attention and you can't filter it and work out what to focus on. Mm. I'm wondering about, as you're thinking about bedtime, because I know I get this dreaded feeling. Yeah. Well, it's changed now because my daughter isn't going to school very much, but I used to get it just before 3 o'clock when the children were coming home.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of builds up from like one, you start to think, and then you think by 3 o'clock you're feeling like so distressed because you know they're coming home. You must have that for nighttime.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, we used to call it the witching hour, didn't we, when they were babies. And, you know, at least when they were babies, the witching hour would be over and then you'd have an evening with your partner and you'd have maybe a bit of Netflix and some dinner and you'd go to bed and you'd do it all the next night. This is like the witching hour can be the whole night. So you haven't got a clue if you're going to have an evening. I mean, I haven't sat and had an evening for a long time with Sunny.
I really remember those times. I mean, my kids stay up later than me now, but those times when you were had no time in the morning and you're so desperate for that 1 hour or 2 hours in the evening, and you have, I mean, my youngest used to just pop in and out of bed from 7 p.m. until 10, 11 p.m. asking questions about why, what does the microchip in the phone do and what are all these things have, you know, and I try every single thing, you know, I try doing like yoga nidra, like, you know, down the spine, and we'd listen to podcasts, I'd lie next to them, but I couldn't look at her and I had to like turn to the side and all of these kind of things to enable her to sleep. And eventually she would fall asleep and I would fall asleep.
Yeah.
And it just, I was so resentful.
In the same bed.
And I was so resentful of really not having that time
together. It's like being robbed. You get robbed of your adult time with your partner. I think it does massively impact your relationships and the fact you can't go out. We hadn't been able to go out for dinner or.
What happened with us as well, which is happening again, but for a different reason. But that's another episode. Is we need two adults. Mm. And I know you made that, but yours is more extreme. But you know, the idea of somebody traveling and going away when your kids are going through that, because who's gonna put the other two to bed because you're with this one?
Who's gonna clean up the kitchen?
Who's gonna clean up the kitchen?
Yeah,
all of that. And most people, not most people, but a lot of neurodivergent families only have one parent.
It's so difficult. Mm. And I mean, the thing I've learned, and this is a really annoying one for people to hear because it takes work, is it's all about you regulating yourself to help your child regulate. So the neurodivergent child can't regulate themselves. Mm. They can't regulate their emotions. They're finding it so difficult to calm down. So if you're anxious and heightened tonight, just go the fuck to sleep.
And they're so sensitive to
sensitive to everything you're exuding from every pore. It's like, please, I just want to watch that show. Mm. I want to watch the Beckham Netflix thing like everybody else.
I used to do this really hard spoon. The hard spoon and with the deep breathing.
You're willing them to sleep.
You're willing them to follow my breathing.
Yeah.
And I remember one time my 11-year-old said to me, Mum, I can't breathe that like that. Because I was like, just do the breathing that I'm doing. And I was going, and I realised they're little lungs. They couldn't do those really deep. But I was sort of hoping that would kind of slightly suffocate
But the hard work I'm talking about is this regulation thing. It's so hard, and I call it like trying to get zen.
Mm.
So if, you know, it's 2 a.m., say even this morning, and I was like, do you know what, I've got to record podcast tomorrow for like 3 hours. I'm going to be tired. I really want her to go to sleep. But I'm like, okay, don't catastrophize.
Yeah.
Do not think about what the hell you're going to be in tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's no point, because actually you've done it. This is why I have a little mantra to myself. You've done it before. You've been through this before. You can survive. You can survive on no sleep. You will catch up. I mean, I literally now try and find places to nap and just shut my eyes or anything, even 10 minutes, just to get away from this buzz of tiredness, because it's not good. I mean, I do get a bit scared about health, my health, and like Sonny and I are both like, this cannot be good for our health. Like, you know, the number one thing is sleep, isn't it?
Char, I think the only reason you can do that is because you have had to stop working.
Yes.
Like, not saying because you don't work. I mean, you've had to stop working to manage your family situation, and therefore you're incredible and you've invested all of this time and research into it. But it's bloody hard. It's you make it sound like it's not because you're so calm.
No, it's really hard. I mean, if I was working, there's absolutely no way. The whole family probably would have imploded by now. I mean, it did implode. It did. Yeah. That's why I couldn't work at that point.
But I think what you also said was that you have a mantra, you have, this idea of trying to find a Zen. Mm. And that, I think, when that's a really strong practice, and I think that applies to so many things in our life, and it, for me, it's definitely come over many, many years of catastrophizing and worrying and thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow and trying to control it. Mm. And but now I'm also the same. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I can't compare this to sleep because I don't have it, but if you have that thinking about work as well, like if you are working and you have to, you can also say, I'll find a way to make
it work.
And I know I don't mean to oversimplify that in any way, and I think you absolutely need to have the flexibility, and we've talked about, we can talk about that more another time, but that mindset that you can find in those moments where you actually can't do anything else and you know it's going to pass and something will happen the next day.
Yeah.
Might be bad, might be good, but something will happen, and right in that moment, you can't do anything about that. Mm. And I reckon that's the gold.
Yes. I think that's what we've talked about a lot. And I think both of us, Anna and I, have come, we've both come to that at the same time. And it sounds flippant to say it, but it's, you need to trust the universe.
Mm. Mm.
So we have no control over our lives at the moment, because there is no guidebook for our children. You know, as many books as we want to read, as many podcasts as we want to listen to, no one knows your child like your child. No, it doesn't make
like
sense.
Like you.
Well, no one knows your child.
They don't even know themselves.
Anything.
They don't even know themselves at the moment. Yeah. So you just, all you can do is wing it. But when I say wing it, not in a sense of, fuck it, let's just see what happens. More in the sense of, let it go.
Yes.
Like, what else can we do? We just have to go, right. I mean, that's why I share about how much I don't sleep, because I just want to go to the universe. Oh, I've been up, you know, I've had no sleep for 48 hours. I've had days where it's 2-3 days where she's had no sleep at all. And I've been up for some of that time with her. And I'm like, I kind of need to share that because it's crazy.
Mm.
And, but also it's like to show the world that life does go on. Mm. You do survive it. It's awful.
Yeah.
And, but at the end of the day, what else can we do? We've got to trust the universe. We've got to.
And it will change. But it will change. Thing you can be sure of, it'll be different somehow.
It'll be something.
At some point.
She'll be a teenager and will not get out of bed, I'm sure. Yeah. Be that person, won't she? And I'll be like, what? I want to go and do stuff.
No, you'll go and do stuff, and that you won't care that the kid's in bed. You'll be like, woo, I'm out.
Yeah. See ya.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's really helpful. Even like we talk all the time, but I don't have... It's been really interesting and helpful to understand what that looks like and what you've done. I'm sure there's plenty of people that relate to that. So Godspeed to your bed tonight.
And if anyone's up at, you know, 2, 3 a.m. Australian time, it's actually great because in the UK I can, like, chat to people.
Yeah.
You know, this whole, like,
dual... For UK listeners, look out for the green light on Char's.
Yeah, it's me.
I'm whatever, like, app you're on.
Yeah. It's great. I can do a whole pile of catch up with friends.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Char. And
thanks, guys.
Yeah, I really hope that something changes soon.
Hope you're not alone, guys.
Not alone. Yeah. Thanks.